as we start to see ourselves as a leader, other people then begin to recognize us as a leader. And again, that virtuous cycle happens where now this becomes self-reinforcing. We even did a study that showed that if your friends and family see you as a leader, you internalize that feedback from them, and you actually think of yourself as a leader more at work, which in turn is related to displaying more effective leadership behaviors at work.
Welcome to Rochester Business Connections, powered by Bauberg Marketing, LLC, where I get the chance to chat with Rochester, New York's very best business owners, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders. I am your host, Ben Albert. Don't forget to subscribe, and remember, we don't do advertisements. My fee for this show is simple. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Let's get started. I am here with Mike Polansky. Mike, what's up? How are you today?
I'm doing great, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know, energy's great today. This is going to be an awesome conversation. And this is a moment where I have a cheat sheet because your credentials need to be mentioned here. Because you're a PhD, you're a leadership coach by day and by night because you are a professor at Rochester Institute of Technology. And you're the owner of Empower to Lead. One thing that blew my mind is, I Google your name so I get to know a little bit more about the man I'm talking to. We really just met. And you've been cited, you know, based on Google citations, you've been cited, your research has been cited thousands of times. So other researchers are going to your information as quality information that they're citing in this, you know, public data. Not public, it's private data. You can tell that I'm not an academic.
No, that's all public. Yeah.
Okay.
It's all in the public domain. Mm-hmm.
Good to know. And yeah. I'm just excited to learn from someone who studies, practices what he preaches. And I want to talk about your business. But first, I'm just curious, RIT, like, what do you teach there? What's your focus at Rochester Institution of Technology?
Yeah. Thanks, Ben. So I'm in the Saunders College of Business at RIT, and I've been there since 2009. My second stint since 2009. I actually did a year and then left and then came back. But I teach in the management department. So I teach leadership courses, a variety of leadership courses, everything from undergraduates and learning how to function on teams to MBA classes that kind of handle that same stuff at a more advanced level. And for many years, I have also worked in our online executive MBA program, teaching both leadership, but then also facilitating leader development classes where it's more of a coaching type of relationship. And then when I'm not doing that, they also have me to teach business ethics, which is a lot of fun as well.
Good stuff. So you work at RIT, you have a full-time job. Why start your own business? You're obviously passionate about leadership. Tell us a little bit about Empower to Lead. And what exactly does that mean, Empower to Lead, with a two in there? And Empower to Lead, what's that mean? And tell me a little bit about it.
Well, sure. So, I'll start with the name. It was just a little play on words. Instead of Empower, you know, E-M-P-O-W-E-R, it was my first, you know, M-P, right? So M-P, Empower to Lead. But the idea behind that was everything that I try to do is to help leaders develop, to essentially empower them with the little E to be able to lead better. Right? That's the bottom line. To answer your question though, you know, it's kind of interesting. I had a background in business. So my first job out of college was, I was a buyer for a major department store, Fortune 500 company, worked in banking after that. And I always had an inkling to teach, but I didn't really know what that meant. So I eventually decided to apply to a PhD program. Mm-hmm. And the only thing I knew about that was, it was hard. It was really hard. And it better be in something that you really love or you're just not going to make it because, you know, it just takes too long, too much effort. And for me, that was leadership. I have always been fascinated by leadership. That's where my heart is. And so I went to Binghamton University and I completed my PhD in leadership. And from the get-go, I have tried to maintain a balance among teaching, scholarship or research, and practice or transformation. And the nice thing is all three of those play off of one another really, really well. They do fit. So the stuff that I'm researching or more often taking from other people's research, I can try it out in practice. And then those lessons are distilled back into the classroom, which then feeds more ideas, and it just becomes a nice sort of virtuous cycle.
Yeah, virtuous cycle. Well, what are these things that you're researching? As I mentioned, you've been cited numerous times. Maybe tell me a little bit about some of the things you've researched in the past, and then we'll talk about what your current focus is. But cite maybe a study that you've published in the past and what you learned from it.
Sure. That's a great question. So I started my career, I wrote my dissertation on leader integrity. So and what I'm about to say almost sounds ridiculous, but my whole dissertation and the whole first 6 years of my career were based on one thing. When leaders do what they say they're going to do, when they act according to their values that they say are important, and when they keep promises, good things happen. Right, performance goes up, trust goes up, commitment goes up. Like all the good stuff starts happening, and it's that one just very, very simple thing. Wow. Do what you say you're going to do. I mean, that's like the single biggest driver. And again, it sounds ridiculous because, you know, if you say that, everyone's like, "Well, duh, right?" I mean, of course, that's
it. Is it really that simple?
Yeah. You know, so conceptually simple, practically not so simple. So. Right. Yeah, so that was good. And then about 8 or 9 years ago, I kind of shifted my focus to leader development. That's really where my passion is, right? Understanding the science of how leaders improve, how leaders grow, how leaders get better. And I'll tell you this story because I love this story. And maybe somebody else would love it too. I had a fellow professor, a friend of mine who's on the West Coast, and he was here at RIT giving a little talk. And we had some time before he had to catch his flight back. And I said, "You know, James, what do you want to do?" And he said, "You know, I've never seen Niagara Falls. You know, we've got 8 hours. Could we go see it?" I'm like, "Yeah, let's do it." Right. So we drive over to Niagara Falls in like February. So we do the obligatory jump out of the car, look at it, get back in the car, right? Because it's so cold. And on the way back, I'm like, "Hey, are you hungry? Let's go to the Anchor Bar in Buffalo, and the home, you know, the birthplace of the Buffalo wing.
Buffalo chicken wings."
Right. So we go there, we order our wings, we're sitting there drinking a beer, waiting for the wings to come out. And I swear this happened. I don't have it, but I swear that it happened. We actually took a bar napkin from the Anchor Bar and started sketching this up. I asked him just off the top of my head. I said, "You know, we spend so much time looking at how leaders develop at work. But if we think about it just for a second, most of the leadership lessons that we learn are not at work, right? It's something that we learned as a kid, you know, on a little league team or in high school, or we learn it as parents, or we learn it, you know, volunteering in a community organization. That's where a lot of the development happens. And yet, at least in the research, we kind of ignore all of that to our detriment." And so we actually drew up a little model of what this might look like. And that's what I've been doing ever since, is trying to understand how people develop as whole persons in all areas of life, but always keeping an eye on what does that mean at work.
Oh my gosh, it's powerful. I mean, if I want to develop as a whole person, I'm a great example of this, not to throw myself under the bus, but I'll learn concepts, I'll read a book, I'll listen to podcasts. But if I don't actually take that information and use it, it goes nowhere. And then there's other people that are just born to lead, and they might be in hiding, but they've never read a leadership book, but they have the life experiences that when they're put into a leadership role, they can knock it out of the park. And I'm wondering, did you have something yet you wanted to add on that?
No. Okay. I was just I was just resonating with you, and I'm there too. And one of those hard fought lessons of, you know, one small thing that is useful right now is better than, you know, 100 brilliant things that never get put into practice.
Yeah. I like that. One small useful thing right now is better than countless things that never get put into practice.
Right.
And I'm wondering, so obviously you had a shift in your research, a passion about, you know, looking at life experiences, maybe childhood experiences. Is there any childhood experiences that were positive or maybe even a mistake that if you were to look back, I'm guessing your answer is you wouldn't change the course of your life, but do any childhood experiences kind of stick out to you as points that you started to learn about leadership at a young age?
Oh, that's an interesting question. It's hard to point to, you know, a specific instance, but yes. I know patterns. I'll give you one example. I had a great relationship with my grandfather growing up. You know, I was, he had two daughters and I was the first grandson, right? So he thought that was pretty cool. And we spent a lot of time together.
Yeah.
And from maybe age 8 or 9, all the way up through when I graduated high school, every summer we would take a trip somewhere, just the two of us. And at least half of those trips were to Civil War battlefields. Right. And I was a huge Civil War buff, growing up, and I would, you know, read about, you know, different generals, of course, but also the unsung, you know, heroes and leaders, you know, everything from the, you know, the private in one of the armies that you never heard of to the civilians around these battles that would do heroic things. And we used to actually go to some of these battlefields and retrace some of the troop movements and everything. Mm. All right. And so I just remember just being fascinated by some of these stories. So I guess it's been there from a really early age.
Oh, it is fascinating. And now it's your life, your profession to teach these leadership skills, to tell these stories, to do the research and empower to lead. I didn't touch on this. I didn't ask you, what exactly do you do? Are you helping corporations? Are you helping entrepreneurs? Are you helping salespeople, solopreneurs? Is there a specific person that you focus on? Tell us a little bit about, you know, your business practices and who you can help.
Yeah. That's also a wonderful question, you know, and it's both the blessing and the curse of being a leadership guy, if you will, in business. There's leadership everywhere. There's a need for great leadership everywhere. But at the same time, just saying like, hey, I'm the leadership guy. You know, here's all my toys. Come pick one out and start playing with it. From a business perspective, is a bit of a challenge. So I focus on two things, really. One is coaching, leadership coaching. And for many years, I've done one-on-one coaching and some group coaching. A lot of that has been with our executive MBA students at RIT. Right now, I'm working on developing a kind of a comprehensive group-based coaching community that we'll be launching early next year that will combine, I think, the best of all worlds. It will have a huge training component. So kind of my best stuff, the stuff I've accumulated over a decade and a half, this is my best thinking training. It would also include one-on-one coaching and group coaching, and then a peer-to-peer support network. So we kind of got these four different components all pulling in the same direction. So I'm really excited to see that start to flourish. And then the other thing that I focus on, oddly enough, are 360-degree surveys. Hmm. Are you familiar with those?
No. Okay. I'm thinking in it. No.
Okay. So a 360-degree survey, or just a 360, is a leader development tool. So if we wanted to help assess you, Ben, and your leadership.
Please don't.
This is hypothetical. And we would present this survey to you, a bunch of questions to answer about your own actions. And then we would ask the people around you that know you and have observed you to do the same. So if we were in a more traditional organizational type setup, we would ask your boss to complete that set of questions. We would ask the peers on your team to do that. We would ask your direct reports to answer those as well. And then we can even expand that out. Maybe there are other internal or external customers, basically the people you deal with on a regular basis. And so after you answer those questions and everyone else answers, you could compare and see, this is how I see myself and this is how everyone else sees me. And in doing so, we can identify areas that are strengths and everybody sees them, or perhaps are needed some development work and everybody sees that, or the really fun stuff where there's a mismatch, mm-hmm. right? You know, you don't think you're so good at something, but everyone else is like, no, you're doing a great job, right? And so there's a lot of recognition that can come there. So I've been working with 360s for many years, and one of the things that my colleagues and I developed is a multi-domain whole life 360, where we don't just look at the workplace, mm-hmm. but we also invite you to solicit feedback from your friends, from your family, if you volunteer, active in the community, or whatever it might be, to get all of that feedback and get a more holistic picture. So I've had a lot of experience there. And now on the business side, I help small and medium-sized companies design their own custom 360 surveys. So instead of using something generic off the shelf and hoping for the best, we actually create one that is useful for the particular organization.
So it's customized, it's usefully tailored for them.
And exactly.
This is so fascinating. As you describe it, I have heard this concept of like mm-hmm. a 360 analysis. People always say to ask even just your friends and family for feedback. And I got a couple questions on this. First off, when you're looking at workplace, friends, colleagues, maybe acquaintances, do you find that people have multiple personalities based on what room they're in? Has there been any, feedback on that?
It's a wonderful question. And sometimes yes, sometimes no. Let me answer that in two ways. Number one, when we look at the different areas or domains of life, and we ask someone to answer the same set of questions at work, and put your work hat on, think about yourself at work, answer these questions. Now think about yourself with your friends and family and answer these questions. Sometimes there are differences there. You know, you might look at it and say, wow, you know, you seem to really be struggling a little bit at work with, let's say, getting people to think creatively. But with your friends, you seem to be doing that all the time. It seems like the feedback is saying you're inspiring them to think big thoughts. So what is it you're doing over here and not doing over here? And is there some crossover that could happen?
Yeah.
So in that sense, there's differences. The other really interesting thing about 360s is there's a lot of research on them. And there's been this debate. If there's disagreement among all of those different people that are rating you, you know, if your boss sees something different than your peers, than your direct reports, is that telling us something, or is that just sort of error, right? Is it just noise in the data that needs to be washed out? And what we found is those different perspectives are often accurate, right? So just as a quick example, think about your boss. All right, I'm talking in generalities here.
Sure.
What do bosses usually want from their direct reports? They at the end of the day, they want performance, right? They want you to complete the work. I mean, there's a lot more that goes into that and so forth, but that's really what they want, bottom line. Whereas your direct reports want you to display care and concern and for them as people, right? At the very bottom line, that's the most important thing. And so because your boss and your direct reports are looking for different things, they're going to have somewhat different perspectives, even if they're answering the same set of questions. So yeah, there's a little bit of sort of multiple personality, if you will.
Yeah, multiple personnel. It seems like, wow, you're almost, it's like Pandora's box of information that all the cat's out of the bag. You learn all this stuff, and the way your direct reports see you is going to be different than the way your boss sees you and your friends. And I'm wondering, for you personally, or a client of yours, if you're more comfortable talking about a case study, what would the results look like? Like, what's a tangible example of someone who did a 360, maybe their thoughts going into it, and kind of some of the realizations that they got from doing this procedure?
I'll give you two examples. One is really powerful, but actually isn't all that common. And then the other one is more typical. So the uncommon one was, I had a person I was working with once who is an amazing engineer. Just well-respected, had gotten promotions and been in charge of bigger and bigger projects, but didn't really have much of a clue about his shortcomings when it came to dealing with people. And I know that sounds a little bit cliched, like, oh, the engineers, no, because that's usually not the case. In this case, it was. And it was the feedback from the 360 that just kind of threw the curtains open and helped him to realize that he needed to start taking that acumen that he had as an engineer and start applying it to himself, basically, and how he dealt with people. And in the course of a couple of months, made tremendous strides, wow, becoming more of a leader. So that was a bit unusual, but that's kind of the ideal of what we hope don't happen.
Yes, exactly.
But what's interesting, Ben, is most of the time that doesn't. For most people, there'll be some small insights, or there'll be some differences that are kind of, you know, spark a little bit of thinking. But for most people, the value is actually in open-ended comments that accompany the numeric ratings. So in most 360s, there'll be at least a couple of questions that will say, you know, tell me what this person's strengths are, or areas for development, or anything else you want to mention. And that's what people tend to focus on. So that, I found that to be the case about 80% of the time. Mm-hmm. And this has actually pushed my thinking on 360s. And the thing that I'm really starting to focus in on now is having much less emphasis on the numeric ratings and much greater emphasis on these open-ended comments, because that's where the good stuff seems to be coming from anyway. So the wheels are turning right now on this.
Yes. I mean, I love that. And I want to do a 360. Is there a resource you can point me to learn how to do it on my own? Or do you provide a research? I'm a solopreneur, so it's not a corporate environment. What would you recommend I do to get started and have my own 360 analysis done?
Oh, that's a wonderful question. Let's talk. In fact, with I know, since you mentioned that, and my wheels are turning, guess what, Ben? You've just volunteered yourself to be a beta tester, I think.
Please. And I'm very self-deprecating. I'm usually pretty honest. There's some things I don't like talking about, but for the most part, I want to take the results and I want to share them with my community to show this is a person that's just learning about leadership that doesn't actually... I'm a one-man show, so I find personally I'm more leading myself and leading my clients rather than leading employees. So I'm kind of a unique story here. So I'd love to serve as a case study and see what comes up. And I promise to be open-minded to whatever feedback does come up. Cool. I guess
we'll... Yeah, that's great. And I'm really glad that you mentioned your particular setup as a solopreneur, leading yourself and your clients for the most part, right? That's where most of your leadership happens. And I just want to emphasize, I don't want this moment to pass without emphasizing that that is leadership. And it's very important leadership. And it's one that people increasingly find themselves in. Even when I started my career as a, you know, first day of my doctoral program 17 years ago, of course, things were starting to shift. But for the most part, you could talk about leadership in the context of a traditional kind of hierarchical organization, right? With bosses and direct reports and so forth.
Leader on the top.
Yeah, exactly. But as we have evolved, as virtual work has increased, as people have become more entrepreneurial, what you just described is at least as prevalent and as strong as the traditional hierarchical model. So whenever I'm giving examples, I'm constantly talking to two different groups. You know, if you find yourself in a traditional organization, it's think about this. And if you find yourself, you know, in situations where you don't have direct positional authority, you're still leading, and think about it this way. So both are important. So I'm glad that you mentioned that.
So both are important. Now, how important is it? Is everybody a leader? Are there cases that I'm not a leader? I'm going to use the example of childhood to put that aside. Maybe when you're a child, you are more in that learning phase where I'm sure you might have leadership in small groups. But overall, as an adult, as a business person, is everyone a leader? Or what's the answer to that? I don't even know.
Yeah. Let me approach it this way and start with a distinction between a leader and leadership. A leader is a particular person in a particular role, and that role can vary. You know, a leader on a battlefield is a different set of actions and expectations than a leader in a kindergarten classroom. Right. So there's a variety of those things, but that's always about the person. Leadership is the whole system of leading. And the reason I paused there is I was trying to give a definition of leadership, which is another little funny aside is if you have 100 people in a room and you ask them, what's your definition of leadership? You're going to get at least 200 answers, right? It means something a little bit different to everyone. Yeah. But for me, at its essence, leadership is about influencing self and others to accomplish something that wouldn't have been accomplished otherwise. Right? So that's kind of my common denominator, bottom line thinking. So with that in mind, the leadership is the system of influencing one another to accomplish something. And within that, there's certainly a leader or leaders, but there are also follower or followers. And it's that dance between leader and follower that creates this overall system. And the followership activities are every bit as important as the leadership activities. And let me just give an example, if that sounds a little too esoteric.
Yeah.
If a leader comes into a room or would-be leader and says, all right, I've got this, you know, great idea driving in this morning. You know, we're now going to start selling used cars out in the parking lot. And, you know, the business happens to be a clothing store, right? Hey, maybe that's a wonderful vision. Maybe there's something to it. But a responsible follower in that situation is going to push back a little bit. Say, you know, maybe kind of like, can you tell me a little bit more about that, boss? You know, well, what are you thinking here? And so it's that give and take, that push and pull that's important. So all of that to say, to answer your question, are we all leaders? Yes, at some point in some way. Are we all followers? Yes, at some point in some way. And maybe most importantly, are we all responsible for leadership? The answer is absolutely yes.
Love it. Love it. An example came up in my head, a TED Talk that's literally like 10 years old, but let me know if you've seen it. Regardless, I'll put a link in the show notes so people can watch it. It's literally like 3 minutes long. It's really short. But basically, it's something like a high school festival event kind of thing where there's a band playing. It looks like it's either high school or middle school. And there's one crazy kid just dancing like nobody's watching. Everybody's sitting down, chatting. Pretty much 80% of people are sitting. And he's over in the corner dancing like a total maniac. And the TED speaker walks through what's happening. But basically, as he's dancing like a maniac, a new person comes and joins this maniac dancing to the music. Now, this leader has their first follower, and now that there's a first follower, there's a little bit of social bias that, you know, he's not a maniac. This is fun. And a third person joins in, and then three is ultimately a crowd. Now you've got a crowd, and there's three people like fight dancing and basically dancing like maniacs. he walks through what's happening in the video, and literally within 90 seconds, you've got hundreds of kids rushing to this area, all dancing. People are running from the back. People that weren't paying any attention sees what this one crazy person in quotations dancing basically turned into a movement, all from ultimately, he points out, the leader is the person that started this, right? But it's the first follower and then that second follower that allowed that leader to ultimately create a movement. So that follower, I find myself in this place a lot of the time, Mike. I'm not always the starter. I'm not always the genius. But I know if I can support that genius and be a good follower, we can create a movement quickly. So that's just me nerding out on the power of followership. Any thoughts on that concept as a whole, my man?
I think you described it perfectly. And I don't know if I've seen that, but as you described it, I have the mental picture of it.
Yes.
And I think that that's great. And if you would imagine that room and think about what's going on at a more micro level, you know, the 75th person into the crowd, which would probably be me, who can't dance, right? I'm out there, I'm going to be doing my thing, and I'm going to be looking for number 73 or 74 to kind of be like, hey, no, this is what you got to do. Right? And now all of a sudden, you know, way off to the side, way apart from that first and second person, you know, now there's influence going on there too. And what you have now is this whole entire system that takes on a life of its own, for better or for worse. And that's fascinating stuff, which, just looking at it from a systems perspective is really pretty cool.
It truly is fascinating. I'm curious where you learn this kind of stuff from. Do you have a mentor, a coach? Do you have colleagues? Who keeps you chipper? Where'd you learn this? I don't know, man. I like to hear where the brilliant people get their brilliance from, you know?
Well, if you find one today, let's ask that person. That's certainly not me. In fact, I like to brag that I'm pretty sure I've never had an original idea in my life. I'm pretty sure about that. But what I'm decently competent at doing is taking other people's ideas and tweaking them and applying them in new ways. And coming up with something that creates value for other people, right? I'm okay at that, at least. So, to answer your question, mentorship. I have hundreds of mentors, and I think of mentorship again more as a systemic thing. There have been certainly individual people that have, you know, come into my life for certain periods of time, where there was a closer, more intense relationship. It was usually older men that, you know, were a half a generation or a generation ahead of where I was, and took the time and the care to pour themselves into me. You know, going all the way back to playing sports in high school and, you know, professionally and so forth. But along the way, I have been really fortunate to just have a lot of kind of more micro mentors, if you will. So whether it's a podcaster that I love, or an author, or someone that I'm working with on a project, for that period of time, I learned so much from them, and I feel like they're mentoring me. In fact, speaking of a podcaster, about a month or two ago, I actually reached out to a podcaster that I follow and I listen to regularly, and just to say thank you for the work that he was doing, because it's brought me so much experience and joy. And I actually said, this feels weird, but I consider you a friend. Even though this is a very one-way relationship, like, this is the first time you're ever hearing from me. But after listening to you for years, right, I have that affection towards you, and not in a weird way, but you know, you have indirectly poured so much into me that I feel that connection. And by the way, he was very gracious to write back a bit and just, which was also wonderful. It was like, you know, it was like seeing one of your sports heroes, take a moment to talk to you. Like, that's how it felt to me. So
I two comments on that. First off, one thing I have found, because I do it all the time now, if I listen to a podcast and it's not, you know, the president on the podcast, if it's ultimately they're ordinary guys that were on the same trajectory as me maybe 5, 10, 20 years ago, and I reach out and I just compliment them on their podcast, mention something that I enjoyed, and I wouldn't say 9 times out of 10, but more often than not, I get very warm responses. And I want to encourage people, if you binge on podcasts, if you listen to this podcast and you want to reach out to Mike, obviously the info is right below in the show notes, but reach out to people and give them a warm, you know, piece of feedback. You'd be amazed at the circles you get into just by being kind and letting people know you're listening to them. And my second thought, and I teach a short 1-hour seminar. It's not anything mind-blowing yet, but it's on podcasting. And one of the main data points is there's something really genuinely personal about hearing someone's voice and getting to know where they pause and the kind of questions they ask and their life experiences. And podcasting's so personal, very much like traditional radio. I mean, this people can watch it on video, but imagine you like you read a book and you're kind of filling in the characters as you go. You let your imagination run wild. A podcast, you get to hear the voice of this person for hours and hours of content, but you can kind of create your own image of them and the guest, and you can do research, but there's something really just intimate and personal. And I just love to nerd out about podcasts. I'm wondering, podcasts, book, what are some of these examples of, you know, small mentors, whether it's a writer, a podcaster, any big three that you'd recommend?
Oh my, yes. Okay. So here's my current, I think most influential, sources. So the podcaster I was referring to is Dave Stachowiak, and his podcast is called Coaching for Leaders. And the tagline is leadership wisdom through insightful conversation. And that's what he does. He interviews usually authors or other business leaders, it's not just business, it's across sectors, and has these wonderful conversations. You know, often it's with people that just published a book and are on the circuit. Well, he's gotten big enough now that he can talk to some of the well-known names. But those, it really is exactly what it promises. It's leadership wisdom through insightful conversation. It's an easy listen. And Dave's a really nice guy. So that's one resource. Another one that I always recommend to people is the Center for Creative Leadership. CCL.org. They are headquartered in North Carolina. They're worldwide. For a larger consultancy, I think that they are really the best in the world that have a real focus on consulting and coaching, but also research to back it up. They really do a nice job on a variety of fronts of combining those things. So I see myself in that way, but you know, of course, I'm one person. As an organization, I think they do a great job of it. And then let's see, number three. I'm looking over at my my bookshelf just to see what I've been what I've been thinking about recently.
One good question. Tim Ferriss asked this question a lot, and I love this question. He says, if you could gift a book to blank, so if you could gift a book to an inspiring leader, so it's not necessarily the most recent or the most prestigious, if you could gift a book to an inspiring leader, does that help prompt you into anything specific coming to mind?
Oh, it does. In fact, I'm going to grab it. Hang on.
Please.
So it's this book right here. So this is The Coaching Habit, Say Less, Ask More, and Change the Way You Lead Forever. It's Michael Bungay Stanier. And it's been out for a couple of years. It's this is actually the book that I actually do give to people all the time. I'm a book lover, and I love giving away books. I also love receiving books, yes, even though I don't usually always read them. But the nice thing about this is it's impactful. It's an easy read. Even if you just pick up and read 3 or 4 pages, you'll get something out of it. It's a great book to pass along to other people. And so I've just found it to be kind of in the sweet spot of use to most people. So, so there's another one of my mentors, and this actually is the book that that I give to people these days.
Love it. Yeah, send me a link. I'll put that in the show notes because I want people to, I'll grab that book, guaranteed. I'm like 9 books behind, but I am adding them to my queue.
Yeah.
I'm going in order. Once in a while, I do flip the order and read something, but I'm doing my best not to just have them fall asleep on my shelf, because there was a time in my life where I had 75 books that I had purchased and hadn't bought, so I tried to reflip that habit and read them all. So I will read it. It's about 9 in queue right now, Mike.
I'll send you a copy, Ben, and you can put it right in the queue wherever you desire.
I'll put it in the background here. I'll have it sitting
there.
Over
you
in
go.
The corner
right,
here.
Just put it on your virtual coffee table behind you there. Yeah.
Tell me if I'm wrong. Are you a published author? Are you working towards that in your career? What's your thoughts on publishing?
Yeah. So, actually, I am working on a book right now, and the plan is for it to be published right around the beginning of the year as I'm getting my group coaching program up and running. And I'm chosen to go the route of self-publishing. And this is the training part that I mentioned for my group coaching. This book is distilling that knowledge. So that's kind of there'll be a lot more to it in the coaching program, but that's the focus. So I actually drafted this thing about 2 years ago and have continued to tweak it. And now it's time to just pull it together. So yes, I am looking forward to it. Dude. And I tentatively titled, it's going to be Lead Yourself First.
Lead Yourself First.
Yeah.
I love it, dude. I'm going to have you on the show again. In my opinion, if you're self-publishing, you should do a podcast tour. You should get this book in the hands of as many people that listen to podcasts. If you're listening this far, these people are engaged. They'll buy the book.
Right.
You got to do a tour, man. But I'm looking forward to having that book come out and purchasing it as soon as it's released. Is there a timetable? I kind of want to kick you in the butt and have it done. Do you have a goal of when it's going to be released?
So I am I'm cranking now, and my goal is to have a complete draft done by the end of this year, and then just to see how long it goes through the editing process and so forth. So I'm actively working on it right now, but that's the goal. Yeah, January.
Excited to hear it.
Yeah,
I want to go rapid fire. Where
okay.
Short, sweet. Either or questions or fill in the blank. I say this all the time, so if you listen to a lot of episodes, it's very repetitive, but it's a mix of Family Feud with Whose Line Is It Anyway? It's Family yes. Feud because imagine we have 30 seconds. You have to spit out the first answer that comes to mind. However, it's not the most popular answer because the points don't matter. They're completely subjective to you.
Right. Gotcha. Let's play.
Early in the morning, you drinking coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Relaxing, beer or wine?
Beer.
Are you a cat person or a dog person?
Dogs all the way.
Morning person or night owl?
Morning.
Do you have a favorite season of the year?
It's fall. It's right now. Yes.
Have you have a guilty pleasure, something that might not be super leadership intense, just something that you like to do, guilty or not, something you like to do when you're relaxing?
Oh, when I'm relaxing.
Or not relaxing. Any kind of guilty, any guilty pleasures of yours?
I have an amazing world-class sweet tooth. Yes. Yes, I do.
What? And I don't want you to go running to the cabinet right now, but tell me a little bit more about the sweet tooth. Is there a specific thing that just like, oh my God, you start salivating when you think about it?
It's baked goods of basically any sort. I can walk right past soda, pop, whatever we call it. And you know, I drink maybe two Cokes a year. I rarely eat candy bars, but if it's a cookie, a pie, a cake, game over.
Game over. Social media, if someone wants to follow you, friend you, is there specific platforms where you're spending the most time?
Yeah, LinkedIn these days is where I do most of my stuff. I'm on Facebook as well. I think I even have an Instagram account, but I'm totally just a lurker on IG.
Your LinkedIn will be in the show notes. Is it Michael or Mike Polansky, PhD? I'm trying to remember.
It's Mike. Yeah, Mike Polansky.
Mike Polansky, PhD. It'll be in the show notes. And how else do we keep in touch with you? Whether it's the website, phone, email, what should my next step be to basically, maybe I want to do a 360. Maybe I want to read the book when it comes out. Maybe I'm in a corporate environment and I have a whole team that you can help. Where do I go?
Sure. Yeah. Thanks for asking. Certainly my LinkedIn profile. I'm on there all the time. I'm also available by email, and that's just Mike@mpowertolead. So it's MPOWER, the numeral 2, LEAD, right? Empoweredtolead.com, which is also my website, obviously, empoweredtolead.com. Or you can do the old fashioned thing and use the telephone, 585-382-8700. I also text on that one as well.
Cool. Yeah. If you're like me and you don't always like calling people you just met, you can send a text, but it sounds like text, LinkedIn, email. You're smiling. You're energetic. Obviously, Mike will be happy to speak with you. And I appreciate you taking the time. Just a couple closing out questions. I'm curious, is there anything we missed that you're excited about, whether it's research or anything that you wanted to bring to the table that I forgot to ask you?
You know, I don't think so. I think we've covered a lot of ground here. I'm really excited to see how things are going to shake out with Empower to Lead in the next year or so. I'm super excited about the group coaching community that will be up and running. This is, this all represents my best thinking and my best effort. And I'm just thrilled to get it off the ground.
I'm excited for it too, Mike. I got one more question, and it's self-serving, but I think even great leaders, even the best leaders will benefit from it. I don't see myself as a great leader. I'm still learning. I wasn't a natural leader when I was younger. How should I feel? What should I do? Let's say someone's young. They don't think they're a good leader. They've made leadership mistakes. What should be my first step to start turbocharging my leadership development and maybe start seeing results as quick as I can, you know?
Yeah. It's beginning to see yourself as a leader. The fancy term, there's leader identity, which I do a lot of research on. And it really does start to that. As we start to see ourselves as a leader, other people then begin to recognize us as a leader. And again, that virtuous cycle happens where now this becomes self-reinforcing. We even did a study that showed that if your friends and family see you as a leader, you internalize that feedback from them and you actually think of yourself as a leader more at work, which in turn is related to displaying more effective leadership behaviors at work. So, and again, it sounds simple, overly simple. And maybe the concept is, but the doing is a little more difficult. But just simply beginning to recognize yourself as a leader is, that's the, that's where you kick off from.
I love it, Mike. As of today, I'm the best leader on earth. And
you're the best leader that Ben is. All right. So, all right. Yes.
Yeah. I overdid it on purpose. Though. Not the best leader.
Like, oh, great. Now Ben's got, now we've created a narcissist. No.
Mike, you've been a pleasure. I appreciate you coming on the show.
Oh, Ben, thank you so much. This has been so much fun. I really appreciate this. And I appreciate that all that you do to bring the Rochester community together. Really do appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Rochester Business Connections. Don't forget to share this, rate, and comment on your favorite platform. You can also email me, Ben@ValbertMarketing.com. Let's connect soon. Until then, keep thriving, everyone.